right, not to start out on a sour note, because it's Friday. It's the best day ever invented. But you and I have experienced this, I think, either 3 or 4 years in a row now on Mother's Day, where Steve's show does what they call Mamapalooza, and everybody's mom comes a-calling. And then we do the transition, and your mom is no longer with us, and my mom is no longer with us. And I think it hits me hardest at that point every year. I can't speak for you.
Honestly.
But that's when you go, oh, that's not fair.
Because you know what would be fun is if we had our moms on. I was listening to Andrea Darlis's mom talking about her getting a pink guitar.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking my mom would have some classic Teenage Wendy stories.
I know she would.
And your mom would, too.
I know.
Not Teenage Wendy stories. Of course,
no,
Teenage Bill
stories. My mom had some Teenage Wendy. I'd always go, how did you know that, Mom?
But our moms were on our shows in the past.
Yeah.
My mom played Mrs. Claus very well, and she was always snippy to me.
Yeah. Did you notice that, too?
Yes.
Your mom...
You're not going to get anything.
In the guise of Mrs. Claus, always took shots at you, which I don't understand at all, but
although,
she did.
Look at me. I'm a chip off the old block.
Well...
And your mom was on. You were on vacation, and I had your mom and dad on to sit in.
You know, I've said this before. I think either the nicest gift I've ever received or one of them was from you was the year that my mom died. You had a tape made. I was on vacation in Florida with my family, and we all had the idea, wouldn't it be funny if my parents sat in for me if they filled in?
So I don't think you thought that would be funny. I think everybody else liked the idea.
I nodded along with it. Everybody liked the idea, and I'm like, yeah,
they were great.
That'll be fine. And I didn't get to hear it because I was in Florida. And then about a week or so before Mother's Day, you presented me with a cassette tape. And I'll never forget this. I couldn't listen to it with my family around because I knew I was just going to be blubbering. So I got in the car, and my car at the time had a cassette recorder because they were state-of-the-art. And I just played this recording that I had never heard of my mom and my dad sitting in. And
they were fantastic, weren't they?
It was so hard to listen. It was so great and so hard to listen to at the same exact time.
I will tell you, I have lucked out with in-laws.
Have you? Yeah.
Because Annette and Jim, they're awesome. And I, you know, you don't get to pick your in-laws. I would have picked them.
Right.
So
that's
the
highest compliment, I think.
It is. I'm an orphan. I don't have a mom or a dad, so it's nice to have two in-laws that are...
All right. For a second, think about that, because my wife says that all every now and then, too, that she's an orphan. And in my head, I think of Annie. I think of the comic strip Annie, who is that's an orphan. But it's sad, but at some point, if you lose both your parents, you're an orphan.
I know. And Jim is much like you saying, you know, Wendy, you're too old to be an orphan. You're not.
No.
It's just weird when you think about it. And then when you have kids.
Right.
That's, you know, my mom nor dad got to meet my boys.
Isn't that the
biggest tragic? That's a bummer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a redhead because of my mom, because I always said, oh, God, if I have a redhead, I'm sending it back. And when Michael was born, I looked at that head and thought, God, I've not been with Bozo. How did this happen? And then I looked up and thanked my mom, and I can't imagine Michael having any other color hair.
Yeah.
And he's so proud of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, Dylan comes along, who's a mini-me, and now I know what I put my mom through. So mom is looking out.
I guess so. I guess so. So when you think about her, like for me, the two hardest days every year are always Mother's Day and Christmas Eve. Those are the 2 days that I always have a hard time with. Are you the same?
Yeah. I mean, her birthday, I think of it, and I always call my sister to say, happy mom's birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
Keep
the streak alive.
Yeah, just that we remember her on her birthday. Sometimes I go to the cemetery. I don't usually pick days to go to the cemetery. It's just every once in a while when I'm driving down near Mary Queen of Heaven, I go in. I know you don't.
It's been a point of contention in my family is that after my mom died, I have never once been to the cemetery. I was there when she was buried, of course, but I have never once been there since. And there was a time where my dad would be very upset with me about that and try to figure out why. And
some people don't do that, and it's fine.
I know.
You think of her often.
Oh,
you don't have to go there to think of her.
And my excuse was, I'm not a religious person to begin with, but even if I were the most religious person, I would say that's not where she would hang out.
Right.
Like if the belief system is what it is,
she's not in that box underground.
Right. She would want to be in the places that she was the happiest.
She's on one of your shoulders and your brothers to be your guardian angel.
Yeah. Not putting enough time in my opinion. I think she needs to change her hours a little bit. But yeah, I for people who do visit the cemetery, I so totally get it. I 100% understand it. But I have not been there once, and I don't know that I would ever go. And I know that sounds horrible, but that's where her remains are, and that's not what I'm in the market for.
Right. And I mean, I don't go on a regular basis.
But every once in a while?
Every once in a while.
You feel good when you're there?
Yeah.
Do you?
You know, if I'm driving by Queen of Heaven, and there's been some times, I think a couple Christmases ago, we were driving to a cousin's house in Glen Ellen, and we passed it.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that's where my mom is. And the kids said, let's go in. So we did on the way to a family Christmas. And that was, it was just, I didn't stay there for a long time, but it felt good.
Does it jar you when you see her name?
Not anymore.
But there was a time where it did.
Yeah, but I had a lot of practice with that because my dad had been buried since I was younger.
Yeah.
So it was weird seeing a second headstone there, I got to tell you.
Every time, like, I remember during the burial, you know, it was emotional anyway, but just seeing her name on a headstone was extremely disturbing. I mean, it's obvious what was going on, but just to see it in
so final
chiseled print was very, very tough for me. And I think I've told you this. For years, we used to visit her mother in a cemetery, and it was always my mom and my brother and I, and then my grandfather would go. It was his wife who had died. And they had a situation where his headstone was already up with his name on it and his birthday and then a dash and then, of course,
blank.
An open space. But I thought, boy, that I know other people have experienced this, but to visit a cemetery and see your own headstone with your name on there, that's not the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, but that's how they did it. They buy plots.
Yeah.
I got nothing. I didn't plan ahead for college or my funeral plot.
You'll be buried at the new Alta location across the street.
I can't wait for that thing to open. I just got a text, something about, why in the heck would you talk so rudely about redheads? It's people like you who give the redheads a bad rap. Knock it off.
I agree.
I have a redhead.
I know you do. I think that's very honest.
I know redheads have been teased, and that's why I didn't want one.
But now I got one. You have one, and you realize
I love it.
They're kind of like the rest of us.
They are. And there aren't that many of them. That's very. Michael loves being a redhead, and he is going to be 18 in 2 weeks. And I can't tell you how many millions of times when he was a baby, people would say, I can't. Old ladies would come up to him and say, I can't get that color in a box.
Oh.
Okay, what do you want me to do?
Like
coloring
okay.
Yeah, I can't recreate that. And then when we were bringing Michael home from the hospital when he was born, it was really orangey-like hair. It was pretty bright.
Yes.
And we had to stop at the Jewel or something. It was his first trip. He's in the little car seat. And some older woman says, you know, how did he get the red hair, honey? Because she looked at me. She looked at Jim. He's brunette. I'm blonde. Yeah. I said, you know, my grandma had a couple of redheaded sisters, and I guess that's where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, you know what I've been told? And I said, what? You have a redhead when you don't do it enough.
Oh.
You're a little rusty.
Oh.
Thank you.
Beautiful. What a beautiful
Can
sentiment.
You help me with my groceries now and leave me alone?
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm not knocking redheads.
No, not now.
Although I don't like the ginger thing. I don't call
that's
them that.
That's confusing. Yeah.
He doesn't like that.
Well, that's what they're called now.
No, that not when they are one.
I don't. But what Steve said is interesting because I don't remember as a kid that ever being a term.
Never.
Right? But now,
well, South Park helped make that happen when it was beat up a ginger day.
Kick a ginger
day.
Oh,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I'm sorry. I stopped watching that. It was funny at first.
After that episode?
No. After, you know, the first season, it wasn't funny to me anymore.
Right.
I feel kind of guilty because, you know, you have the lovely Mama Palooza on the Cochrane show and then you have the Dead Moms Club here.
That's sad.
But, you know, there's your 50-50.
Right.
Because there are people who are feeling the same way that we are.
Oh, sure. All right. Let us take a break and then we will come back and there will be merriment for everyone. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I know Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote a book, but when I think of great literature, I don't think of him.
What?
Sorry.
Take that back.
No. Happy Mother's Day to you and yours, your extended mothers, your in-laws. The Mamapalooza was going on the Steve Cochran show this morning, and we don't have moms. Although we should have had Kevin's mom on.
We should have had Rhonda
should have been on. Oh,
she's younger than you guys, isn't she?
That's why she's not on.
We don't want to talk about it, Steve.
Do you need to say a happy Mother's Day to your mom?
Yeah, I can do that. That's a good idea. Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Instead of a card.
People do it in addition to a card.
I
guess
you I have to get her a card still?
Yeah, still get her a card.
All right. We were talking about going to the cemetery, and I don't go. Like, my cousin Susie goes on birthdays, on death dates, on holidays. She puts wreaths and flowers.
Wow.
And she said when she passes
She's
away.
She's a season ticket holder.
She is. And she said when she passes away, I have to pick up the baton. And I said, good luck with that, Suze. I'm really not going to do that.
Yeah.
All right. John is on the line with us. Hi, John.
Hello. Thank you for welcoming me into your Dead Mother's Club.
Of course. You're more than welcome.
Hey, my mother passed away back in, I think, I can't remember if it was 2010 or 11. She wanted no funeral. My sister and I, we just cremated her and didn't even have a ceremony, just the two of us.
That was it.
Yeah, and I have her ashes. I've kept them in a jar in my drawer. And I can't decide what to do with them. And honestly, I find a sense of comfort every once in a while pulling them out and just looking at the outside of the jar. It's a, you know, urn thing.
That makes so much sense to me. It's frightening. I totally
I get
that.
It. And you can't get rid of those. You don't know what to do with them. I mean, you just have them.
That's it.
And I had lots of closure around her death. Like, when my father passed away, he died in a hunting accident up in the Cascade Mountains. So
Yikes.
All of a sudden I got a phone call and said, you know, Dad's dead.
Oh.
But when my sister and I spent 2 days by her bedside. We laughed, talked about how great parents they were and reminisced and everything. So I had lots of closure, but now I just don't have to do those damn ashes.
No, you can't. So, there's no way you can dispose of those. There's no way that works. You just have to keep them for the rest of your life, I would imagine.
I think I'm going
to
do that. Yeah.
Yeah, but you should also put something in your will that, you know, whoever takes possession of these ashes can't dispose of them because, you know, that will bother you then.
Could you leave them to Wendy?
No, I don't want them. Yeah, I'm not going to the cemetery to put wreaths, and I don't want your mom's ashes. Sorry, John.
Okay. I understand.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hang in there for Mother's Day.
Thank you. Bye.
Now, Wendy, do you want people to visit you when you're dead?
Sure.
Yeah? How often?
I don't really care. I just want people to remember me. That's all I want.
All right. That's fair.
I wouldn't mind if they lost my ashes.
Really?
It's over. It's over. It's done.
That would be bad. You would haunt someone who lost your ashes. I know you.
I'm going to haunt you anyway.
But I know this is just symbolic, but isn't there something nice about spreading someone's ashes in some place that means something to them? A lot of people do it at Wrigley Field or at sea or, you know, just some place that meant something.
I don't believe in the ashes.
No.
I want to be in a box.
Hmm?
Jim wants to be cremated, but his ashes have to be next to me so I can bother him for eternity. Yeah. That's just how it goes.
He's got that to look forward to.
You're going
to
intermingle?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Hi, Jan. What are you oh-my-godding about?
Oh, my! You know, you guys are so funny when it comes to a subject that is so sad.
It is. And thank you.
But, Bill, here's what you can do, because I'm not a cemetery person. I'm not a funeral person. It's not that I don't disrespect the individual that has passed away, but this is the way I deal with it. You know, my mother-in-law passed away. She was the best thing in my life.
Mm.
She taught me a lot. But I have all her recipes. I have stuff that belonged to her. I have mementos and pictures. And that's what I hold on to all the time. And it helps me because she was such a terrific lady.
Yeah.
You know, so, Bill, don't feel bad.
I don't feel. I feel like I should feel bad,
but you
don't.
And you shouldn't. Everybody deals with death differently.
Yeah,
you're right. You're absolutely right, Wendy. And you just have to cope with it your way. And if people don't like it,
too bad.
My dog is barking.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know. I don't want people to come and look at me when I pass. I want just a service, you know, somewhere where people are going to have a party and do that. So, you know what, Bill, don't feel bad. And and that's just part of life.
Thank you,
Jen. And I understand thoroughly. And Wendy, you are just so out there. I just love you.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to give a real fast plug. Wendy, if you want flowers,
yeah.
West Bourbon Humane Society in Downers Grove on Ogden Avenue is having their plant sale, and all the money goes to the animals at the shelter.
That's where I adopted my cat Declan from. So.
Did you really? Well, yep. Then come and see us on the weekend.
All righty, Jan. This weekend?
Okay. Yeah, this weekend starts Saturday.
It's I'll like the Trading Post.
It is similar to, yes, it is.
Thank you, Jan.
So true, yeah.
I'm just worried about with my funeral, and I know I joke about this, but yeah. I'm 100% serious. I am really particular about my hair and makeup.
Yeah.
And if they don't get it right,
what's going to happen?
I'm going to haunt that person for eternity.
Really, would that bother you if at the end people said, oh, it doesn't look like her?
Right. Her hair was never like that. What'd they do? It's like a rainbow afro wig.
No,
what'd they do to her?
I'm worried people are going to go, she used to wear too much makeup anyway. She looks better this way.
Oh, no.
That's what I'm worried
That's
about.
That's the worst.
I can see that.
All right. We must take a break. Steve has the news and then all kinds of stuff on today's show. So stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I told Jimmy Mack today, he said, what do you want to do for Mother's Day? I said, I want to plant stuff. I'm jonesing to garden, and it's a good thing we have Stacy Hervella on the line with us right now. She is the horticulturist for Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs, and we've got her on the line right now. Stacy, how are you?
I am great. It is a beautiful day. The weekend looks great for gardening, and I am raring to go.
All right, I need some shrubs because we cut down a giant ash tree in our backyard last year, which I got to tell you cost a fortune.
Yep.
It was a real old tree that got hit by the ash borer beetle. And I have a clean palette to work with now, and I need some shrubs to kind of give us some privacy from the neighbor's yard behind us. Any ideas?
Well, so how much sun is there? Is it full sun now?
It's full sun now.
Yeah, right.
Wait, now let me ask, full sun until about, like, say, 5 in the afternoon. So that's pretty much full sun, correct?
Yeah. So as far as, like, a plant tag or a plant recommendation goes for full sun, that means a minimum of 6 hours of unobstructed sun each day.
All right.
So you are easily in full sun there. Well, you know, how tall do you need them?
There are wires for cable and stuff, so up to 15 feet.
Oh, okay. So you want some pretty good coverage. Well, you know, I really like juniper for evergreen coverage like that. There's a lot of native junipers, which are really nice, and they're, you know, deer-resistant, rabbit-resistant, so they're really nice. If you don't have deer and rabbit issues, arborvitae is a really affordable, fast-growing choice for that as well. There's a variety called American Pillar that you'll find out. That's one of the fastest-growing varieties. But if you don't need something quite so tall, you know what is a great choice? It's like a big landscape rose, something like Oh So Easy Double Red Landscape Rose. It gets to be about 5 feet tall and wide, so if you don't need, you know, all of that height, very fast growing, and it's going to bloom for you, you know, basically June through November.
And those are roses?
Correct.
Stupid question for you. This is going to be the dumbest ever.
Oh, get ready.
Obviously, there are thorns on it, because my dog kind of walks through the garden sometimes.
Yep. So there is
although he'll learn very quickly not
to. There is one rose that doesn't have thorns. That's Oh So Happy Smoothie Rose. But that one's not so hard. It's so easy to find. But they shouldn't really, like, drop a lot of branches. And really, you only have to worry about it when you do a little bit of pruning in the spring. So, you know, it sort of depends on what, you know, if you're concerned about it. But, yeah, they do have thorns.
What about a type of hydrangea that would fit in there? Would a limelight work?
Limelight would be a perfect choice, and I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, they get to be about 6 to 8 feet tall. Now, their first year or two, they're going to really devote their energy into growing roots, and then they'll start to really take off. So if you want coverage, you should buy the biggest plants that you can find, you know, get them in the ground, take good care of them, and, you know, not next year, but the following year, that's where you're really going to see them start shooting. But, you know, you'll see those flowers. Super easy to grow. They make great cut flowers as well. So I really like, you know, when you have a plant like that, it's sort of like a dual purpose.
And they're lime green, Bill.
Oh, are they lime green? Yeah.
They are, yes.
Stacy, really nice. I always like to go out of my way to find stories that show you that I have no idea what I'm talking about. And I found one for you. This week, I noticed on a good part of our lawn where the grass is, we've got these like bluish purple flowers that I think are stunning. And I said to my wife, I don't know how we got these, but I love these little flowers
mixed in with the grass.
Yeah, and she said, "Oh, that's the worst thing in the world for your grass." I didn't know that. Why would that be? I think they're really pretty.
Well, I think that that's great, and you have a right to think they're pretty. And, you know, I think that this idea of, like, a really homogenous, consistent lawn is kind of going out of fashion. Like, I think that people are really starting to appreciate that, you know, when these other things pop up, whether they're the blue flowers, the bluets that you're seeing, mm-hmm. or violets or clover, or even dandelions, you know, as people become more aware of the issues of pollinators, they can start embracing, you know, that kind of variation. So I say, by all means, love the blue flowers. I think they're darling, and that, you know, when you look at it just right, they just kind of make like a blue haze.
Yeah,
garden. It's much better than just plain grass, right?
I need you to sign an affidavit because I got to show that to my wife because she said it's the worst thing for our lawn. But I didn't know that.
Oh my goodness, no, no.
All right.
No. And they're a spring annual too, so they'll disappear. You know, once it starts to get a little bit warmer, those will just completely evaporate and they'll come back next year. So they're not even like a really consistent, persistent. Thing to have mixed in there.
Are they blown from the neighbor's yard? Because I noticed my neighbor has a bunch of violets in their front yard, and now we have them mixed in with the grass. Does it just pollinate that way?
Well, yes. Yeah, so violets will spread by the seed pods. When they dry out, it ejects the seed really pretty far. But, yeah, they get spread by animals. The violets have, like, a little tuber, so squirrels can move them around. And violets are pretty opportunistic, so they'll just kind of pop up wherever. But, you know, they're so pretty. They're actually edible, so if you don't spray your lawn or anything like that, you know, you can pick some violets and put them on your salad. They kind of have a honey, sweet, peppery taste, so give them a try.
I'd be so afraid to do that.
We're both like looking at each other like, what?
I would poison my family if I did that.
Okay, well, you do, of course, want to know for sure that it is a lawn violet, but you can look it up online and get a good solid ID on that. But
what are these mushrooms? Stacy said it's fine. Just eat the mushrooms.
No? I'm a horticulturist, not a mycologist.
All right.
So keep me out of the mushroom business.
All right.
We have a texted question. Is it still okay to divide hostas? Do you need to remove the entire plant and then cut them apart? I think, I guess, is this the time to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. Now's a great time to divide hostas. And, you know, most hostas are so tough that you would really be, you know, hard-pressed to really set them back at all. I do recommend that you dig out the whole plant. It's just a lot easier that way, and you're going to get the best divisions. And you dig out the whole plant, you know, and then you can just take, like, a nice sharp spade. Or if you have two forks, like two pitchforks or two digging forks, you put them back-to-back in the center of the plant and then pull them apart. And it just kind of, you know, wrenches the whole thing apart. You can divide it into as many pieces as you want. As long as each one has like one of those little tubes, you know, of hosta leaves and roots, you're good to go.
And those are really perfect for shade, aren't they?
They are. Hostas are excellent shade plants. They're really sort of like a go-to shade plant. But if you have deer, you do not have hostas. That's like one of their absolute favorite food, to the point where it will actually attract them to your yard. So not a great choice if you have deer, unfortunately.
All right. Any questions you might have for Stacy Hervella? She's the horticulturist for Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. You look for the white container with the green lettering. I will be buying some this weekend and planting them. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. And we will continue after these. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. We are talking with Stacy Hervella, and she is the horticulturist for Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. And we have some questions for you already, Stacy, so I hope you're ready to roll here. Oops, there you go. All right, Vicki has a question for you. Vicki, this is Stacy.
Hi, Stacy, and hi, Bill and Wendy. First, I want to say you guys are wonderful. I think you're just wonderful.
You have great taste. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Right.
And I just wanted to let you know that a Mexican petunia is a great flower. You can pot it in the ground or a pot, and they're beautiful. They're purple flowers, and every morning they fall off, and they're just really neat. They're really neat flowers. And maybe she can tell you more. I'm not sure if they have another name, but Mexican petunias is what I've
been calling
them.
Mexican petunias, Stacy.
Yep, that's called Ruellia is the scientific name. Yep, and that is, it's very long blooming. And, you know, if you have a mild winter, again, like we did this year, they very well may actually be perennial for you. But they love the sun, and they just bloom their little heads off.
They are beautiful. And what I do in the fall, I let them, they bloom till winter. And then in October, the leaves, they kind of look like corn stalks, and I kind of use them as decorations for October, for Halloween.
Perfect.
Well, look at you. That's
and
so
Thanksgiving.
Smart.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. Wendy and Bill, you're great.
Thanks, Vicki. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day.
Was that a plant?
What?
That phone call? That was way too positive.
Amber has a question or comment for Stacey Hervella. Hi, Amber.
Hello. Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hello. Do you have a question for Stacey?
I do. Here it is. A couple weeks ago, Stacey, you were talking about a new proven winner variety of a Rose of Sharon called Purple Pillar.
Yes.
I've looked everywhere on the north side of the Chicago suburban area, and I can't find it anywhere. Do you know who might carry it?
Did you try Chalet Nursery?
I called them, and they told me they didn't.
They did not. Well, you know, it is so new that a lot of times the garden centers haven't heard of it yet. I don't know anything offhand, but I'll tell you what. If you want to go to the Proven Winners website, and there's a little purple button that says questions, feedback, we're listening, click there and put shrubs and ask me, and I will ask our Illinois sales manager if there's any area, any place he knows where you can get it. So I'll try to find that.
Stacey, can you buy these online and somehow have them shipped?
You can buy them online. Yeah, you can definitely buy the plants online. But you know, we always encourage people to shop at their local garden center because that ensures you're getting the biggest plant for the best price. You know, it's expensive to send plants because you have to send them next day. You don't want to pay to send a big bucket full of soil.
Sure.
You know, for
plus,
example.
I'm so anal, I like to pick out which plant I get.
Oh. And there's that, too. So, it is available online, but I know I can find it for you at an Illinois garden center. So, give us an email there, and I'll see what I can do for you.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Hey, Amber, I have two suggestions for you. There's Vern Goers, G-O-E-R-S, Greenhouse in Hinsdale, Vern Goers, and also Hinsdale Nursery. Those are two places you might want to call.
I will try there. Thank you
so much.
Thanks,
Amber. Have a good weekend.
I forgot about the purple pillar. I got to put that on my list for this weekend, and now I have to find it.
Maybe if Amber finds it, she can call you back and tell you where she found it.
All right, Nancy has an interesting question. I love perennials, and I can't wait to see what comes up in the springtime so I know what holes to fill. But, Nancy, you're trying to get rid of some perennials?
Hi, everyone. Wendy, you will not love this one. It's called a gooseneck, and it spreads like crazy. I can't get rid of it. I try to pull it out. I don't know if I try to stay away from the herbicides, but I'll use it if I have to. Would Roundup work or any other suggestions?
How do you get rid of gooseneck, Stacey?
Yeah, that is a very vigorous spreading plant, and it is not easy. And you have to make sure that you get all of the little pieces, you know, as you're trying to dig it out, because any little piece that's left in the ground will resprout. The best thing to do really would be to try to dig it out and then leave the area undisturbed in the sun so that, you know, you can try to dry out any of those little pieces. I'm trying to get rid of some really aggressive perennials as well, and I have really just been doing it by digging out the area, taking out the plants, and giving it another week, seeing what comes back, taking that out, and after about 3 weeks, I did have it pretty well under control. So I don't know how much of an area you have with it. A lot of times with those really vigorous plants, you just don't, even if you are willing to apply an herbicide, there's too much surface area in roots for the plants to take up. You can't actually apply enough to get it to translocate to the roots. So I really think that the old-fashioned way, just digging it out and staying on top of it, you can control it that way, but it does take a little bit of work, I'm afraid. But definitely gooseneck loosestrife is a tricky, tricky plant.
Nancy, I have some goldenrod that's taking over my yard, so maybe I'll dig some up and we can swap it out.
Okay, we'll have a Mother's Day swap. That's awesome.
Thank you, Nancy.
Okay.
Good
Thank
luck.
You.
All right, Stacey, we have an awesome contest going on, and to celebrate Mother's Day, we would like to give you the chance to win a Proven Winners Rose Garden, which will include the new At Last Rose, Oh So Easy Double Red Rose, and Oh So Easy Petite Pink Rose plants. To help get your garden off to a good start, you will also receive a prize pack of Dave Thompson's Organic Healthy Grow Fertilizers in 3 varieties. All you need to do is visit the contest page at WGNradio.com. You can enter to win this Proven Winners Mother's Day special. There are a lot of roses out there, and are there a big difference between all these different roses?
There are, you know, and really the difference is, well, first of all, if you're buying a landscape rose, the important thing to know is that these are disease-resistant, low-maintenance roses. And low-maintenance and rose are not, you know, two terms that most people associate with each other because they think, oh, roses are a lot of trouble and they're tricky. But these, the landscape roses, like the oh-so-easy roses and the oh-so-happy roses that we're giving away in the prizes, you know, we have trialed and tested them to make sure they don't get black spot and mildew and all the diseases that you may have seen on other old roses. And best of all, they bloom nonstop. So they start blooming in June, and they do not stop until November. I mean, a lot of times the flowers will be covered in frost, and they'll still be blooming.
So isn't that something?
As long as you have a sunny spot, a minimum of 6 hours of sun every day, they are such a great choice, and they will just give you so many flowers.
Thank you so much. She is Stacy Hervella. She is the horticulturist for Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. You can find them at your favorite garden center. Happy Mother's Day if it applies to you, Stacy.
Oh, thank you. Happy Mother's Day to you too, Wendy.
Thank you. She's not going to say it to
I
you.
I got nothing out of that.
On Father's Day, she'll say it to
she
you.
She better call me on Father's Day. I will sue her.
All right, are we talking television next?
Yeah, we are, actually. Alex Zelbin from TV Guide will be joining us, and we will discuss some
television. Are you going to sue him?
I might sue him, as a matter of fact. Yeah, stick around. It's a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. I have been binge-watching like crazy.
What are you watching?
I'm all caught up on Better Call Saul.
It's excellent, isn't it? Love it.
And Baskets I caught up
also
on last
excellent.
Night.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta do that show.
Steve, it's so good.
You guys,
good.
Louis Anderson in these last several episodes of this season,
yeah.
The best acting I have ever seen, ever.
He won the Emmy last year.
With good reason.
For playing Zach Galifianakis' mom on Baskets. He's that good.
Christine Baskets.
Yep. So good. Speaking of television, Alex Zelbin joins us right now over from the TV Guide. He's at TVGuide.com, where he is the managing editor. How are you, Alex? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
As you just heard, both Wendy and I are singing the high praises of both Baskets and Better Call Saul. Those are two of the best shows on TV right now. Wouldn't you agree?
They're fantastic. I have to admit, Better Call Saul is one of my favorite shows. I am very behind on this season right now.
I just caught up.
It's so good, though. It's a lot of people have said, and I think this honestly is true, that it's more confident in certain ways than Breaking Bad, which is, mind you, also an excellent show.
Yep.
But it came out of the gate running, and nobody expected a prequel/sequel to Breaking Bad to be so good, but it's wonderful.
You know, they keep bookending these little scenes of the Saul character, Jimmy, as we know him on the show, but then later
Jimmy McGill.
He takes on the name of Saul, and they keep showing him at some point in his life later on when he's working in a mall at a food court.
Cinnabon.
Yeah. And they haven't explained that quite yet,
right.
And I'm fine with that. I like that it's kind of a little puzzle that has not been solved.
Yeah, there's a little part of me that hopes that they never actually catch up to the continuity of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Get right up to the cusp of it and then completely skip ahead to the Cinnabon scenes.
I'd be okay with that as well. Yeah. There's another show out there that is dirty and dark, but hysterically funny with Caitlin Olsen from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I am in love with The Mick.
That show is also excellent. You guys have excellent taste.
Oh, thank you.
Talking about it. Caitlin Olsen, we actually talked to her recently at TV Guide before the finale episode, and she was really nervous going from an ensemble cast like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and anchoring a show on her own. But I think what we found over the first season of that and what she found as well is it's still kind of an ensemble. You know, you have the whole cast there supporting you, even though you're in almost every scene like she is on The Mick, and it's great. It's very dark and disturbing. Maybe not quite as dark as It's Always Sunny goes, but particularly for a network comedy, it takes a lot of risks.
It really does. In every character, they have Alba, the maid, who's hysterical, and I'm not usually a fan of kid actors, and the kids they have on this show
pretty strong.
Are tremendous.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great. I agree with you. You know, you're you can go either way with kid actors, but they nailed it on the Mick.
Alex, what do you make of this? Every year there's one or two shows that I think you could qualify as dark comedies or dark dramas. They're just dark. This year there's about 15 of them. How come? What's going on in society that makes us want to watch that?
There's some dark stuff going on in the world, I might say. Yeah. I don't know if I was to venture a guess. I mean, generally speaking, TV trends reflect what's going on in the world, right? We're about to head into network upfronts when the networks announce their new schedules, and there's a lot of stuff that certainly reflects back in certain ways on what is going on either end of the political spectrum. But yeah, I think people are upset. People are very upset, and it's almost a release valve to see people be upset in a funny way on television. That would be my guess about it.
I know Modern Family has been renewed for two more seasons, and I got to be honest with you, I've stopped watching it.
Oh, did you?
Because
why?
It's just not as strong, in my opinion, and yeah. I'm wondering, two more seasons, wow.
Well, you know...
It does big numbers, doesn't it, though, Alex? Right. Modern Family gets big numbers, right?
Yeah, it does well. There's a bunch of other shows like that that just kind of truck along at a certain point. And I think you might see with something like a Modern Family, now that they have 2 years to play and they get comfortable in it, maybe they'll start trying some weirder things, stretching themselves in some ways, because particularly for a show that long in the tooth, they start to get comfortable with the rhythms and the character's speech and the plot lines. But when you give them a two-season pickup, it really gives you a chance to go out there and push the envelope.
Yesterday, they announced two shows that are coming to an end and surprised a lot of people. The first one, now one of them got canceled straight up, and the other one, I think they just amicably decided not to renew the show. The one that got canceled was Last Man Standing, Tim Allen show that's been on for, I think, 5 years or so, right?
Yeah, it's definitely been on for a while, but, you know, it is one of those shows that just kind of trucked along but never really hit, and never really hit the zeitgeist in the same way that, say, Modern Family did, that keeps it going this long. Tim Allen, I'm sure he'll find another job. I'm very confident in that. But ultimately, it was that show's time to go.
The other one is, and this one was a shock to a lot of people, Scandal is no longer going to happen, right?
So this has always been part of Shonda Rhimes, who is the producer of Scandal. This has been part of her plan for a very long time. She was never very specific, about how many seasons that it was going to take to wrap up Scandal, but it was always, relatively speaking, a limited series. She knew that the plan was to go through Fitz's presidency, show his relationship with Olivia Pope, and see where it went. And personally, as a fan of Scandal, I was actually surprised that this was not the last season of the show.
Yeah.
As, spoiler, Fitz is leaving the presidency at the end of the season. So I'm glad that they're ending it. I'm glad that we'll get a couple more episodes to see what happens with the characters, and hopefully they finally get to that shack in Vermont.
But it's very strange to see a show that's doing so well, because it is. It's doing really well in the ratings. It's just the decision of, like you said, Shonda Rhimes and the production team to go, let's go out on top, huh?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there are some producers in the business, and Shonda Rhimes is one of those rare producers that just can do whatever they want. I mean, you know, within limitation, but yeah. If Shonda Rhimes says, hey, this is the last season of Scandal, it's the last season.
That's it. You don't get any more.
One of my favorite comedies on television, The Goldbergs with Jeff Garland, that has just been renewed for a couple more years, huh?
Yeah, I think that's the same sort of situation as Modern Family, though it hasn't quite gotten as long in the tooth. I mean, they found their rhythm with doing these parodies of 80s stuff that are ridiculous but very heartfelt at the same time.
I cry every time. Honest
Do
to
you?
God,
yeah.
I laugh so hard during that show, and I cry at the end of it because I am much like Bevy, and I have a potty mouth, and she really just has her family's best interest at heart.
So the same way I cry when I watch CNN, you cry when this is on. Wow. Interesting. Alex Zelbin is with us, TV Guide's managing editor. If you have any questions or comments, we're easy to reach. We're at 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break and then continue with Alex next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We're talking television right now with TV Guide's managing editor, Alex Zelbin. Alex, because you're affiliated with TV Guide, I like to think that you probably have some inside information. So tell me what you can about this. There were a bunch of stories coming out yesterday that already over at Live with Kelly and Ryan, that's Kelly Ripa, who's been there for years, and Ryan Seacrest, who's been there for a week, that there's some problems backstage, that they're not getting along. Do you know anything about this?
Well, when I sat down to coffee with Kelly this morning,
yes,
that's not a thing that happened. Yes. I think whenever Kelly has a co-host, there's always rumors of drama, and sometimes they're true and sometimes they're not true. But the backstory is that she apparently was concerned, and I think rightly so, that she just got Ryan Seacrest on board as her co-host, and American Idol is booting up at ABC, which is the same network. Was Ryan going to jump ship from her show and immediately go to American Idol? I think far more likely is that he'll do both. You know, he is a machine going all day long doing everything. So he could certainly do Live with Kelly in the morning and then American Idol in the afternoon or night. I could absolutely see that happening. So ultimately, if there is drama behind the scenes or not, I think it will pan out and be totally fine.
You know, he spreads himself so thin. He is a machine, as you mentioned. I don't know why you do that. He can't even enjoy all the money he's making because he has no spare time.
Right.
Yeah, I'll tell you, actually, when the rumors about backstage friction came out and other news about American Idol, specifically that Kelly Clarkson is not going to be on American Idol, though they were courting her. She's actually going to be a judge on The Voice. I was doing a Google image search for Ryan Seacrest frown and Ryan Seacrest sad.
Yeah.
There are no pictures.
No.
There are only pictures of him smiling all the time.
It's a miracle.
It's like the Joker. It's just always on his face.
Right. It's painted on. It's painted on. Now, they can't get Simon Cowell. He's already elsewhere, so he can't be a judge on the show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he actually specifically earlier today said that he is not interested in coming back for an American Idol reboot. Personally, I want them to bring back Brian Dunkelman.
Yes.
That would be
Dunkelman.
Who's that?
That was Ryan Seacrest's co-host for the first season.
I never watched
Ryan
that show.
Dunkelman.
I got to be honest with you.
No?
I never really did. I do love Kelly Clarkson, so she's going to be on The Voice.
She's going to be on The Voice. She's a judge on The Voice.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. There's a whole bunch of people who have questions for you. Will you be fielding questions today, Alex?
I would love to field
questions. Very good.
All right. Let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi. How are you?
We're talking TV with Alex Albin.
Okay. I have two shows that I desperately hope are coming back. The Young Pope and Taboo.
What do you know, Alex? Are either of those shows, Young Pope or Taboo, coming back?
Well, the Young Pope, I believe, is coming back for a second season.
That's Jude Law's show, correct?
Yeah, that's Jude Law's show. He's going from Young Pope to Young Dumbledore in the movies. So he's just super into the young stuff. But he's definitely coming back for a second season of that. I'm sorry, what was the second show?
Taboo. Based on the board game.
I believe that's coming back for a second season as well. You know, it's on FX, which is more of a premier network, I would say, and their Taboo didn't necessarily tear it up in the ratings or anything like that, but they probably want to be in the Tom Hardy business, so I think we'll be seeing a second season of that as well.
Thank you, Mary. We appreciate your call.
Thank you.
I love The Preacher. That was another thing I recently binge-watched, and I think that's coming back in June, isn't it?
It is, and I've seen some early scenes from that. They show them off at AMC's upfront presentation, and somehow they're bloodier and gorier and crazier than in season one.
That says a lot.
My 14-year-old son got me into that show, and I got to tell you, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne is on the line with a question for you. Hi, Marianne. We're talking with Alex.
Hi. Good morning. Well, I love this show, Good News.
Oh, it's really funny.
It is hysterical,
yeah.
And I love the character actors. I mean, they're incredible, and I'm hoping it's doing well. I'm not sure.
Alex, is it?
Well, I have some bad news and some good news.
Oh, nicely played.
So thank you very much.
Sure.
It's not doing so great in the ratings, but the good news is that it actually is coming back for a second season. I mean, I think similar to a lot of shows, comedies are having a little bit of a hard time right now, but certainly they want to be in the Tina Fey business. They want to be in the Robert Carlock business. And like you said, there's a lot of quirky, really fun characters, particularly Nicole Richie has been one of the few breakouts this season for her character on the show.
Do you ever think you'd say that out loud?
No, never.
I also love the mother. She is hysterical.
It's a great cast, and I think it's the sort of show that maybe it was a little rocky in the first season, but we'll really find its stride and footing in the second season.
Excellent. Great.
Thanks so much, Marianne. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Alex, they're doing an animated version of Deadpool, huh?
They are.
Cannot wait.
From producer Donald Glover, who is on Atlanta and was on Community and a couple of other things.
Young Lando Calrissian pretty soon in the box office, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That is one of the crazier projects I think I've heard of recently. You know, Deadpool was a huge movie, but to turn it into a franchise so quickly, and particularly an animated show on FX from Donald Glover, there's just so many elements there that it's hard to wrap your head around. But yeah. I don't know if you guys watched Legion, which was another Marvel-Fox collaboration that they did for FX from Noah Hawley, who was the producer of Fargo, which was stunning and excellent. So at this point, they have enough goodwill that I'm very excited to see what they're going to do with the Deadpool show.
Really, really quick. We only have about a minute. We discussed this last week. It looks like Roseanne is coming back for a limited time. Do you know anything about that?
Not much other than it's happening, and I think it's not the last revival that we're going to see. You know, Will and Grace is coming back on NBC for a new season. They're talking about a Roseanne reboot. You know, that's going to happen, and I think most of the cast is probably going to return.
Both the Beckys?
I would not be surprised if we see a lot more.
Will we get two Beckys? That's a great question. I hope they do.
That's the twist. That's the twist, is both Beckys simultaneously.
I hope it's as good as the original, because that really was one of the best sitcoms on TV at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how they embrace the new status quo of the world.
And everybody be watching SNL this weekend, because Melissa McCarthy, if you've seen the promo, they have her sitting in the makeup chair, and the makeup she's getting put on is to look like Sean Spicer. I cannot wait.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if you guys saw this morning, but she was actually driving a podium around Midtown New York while they were filming an SNL skit. There's some stuff that you can find. It's on TV Guide right now. We have an article up with a bunch of the footage, and it's ridiculous, just her riding the podium and screaming at people.
Is that why Sean Spicer is hiding in bushes? He doesn't want to get hit by the podium? Is that why?
I think so. I think he's running away.
It all makes sense.
What if all of a sudden he shows up on Saturday Night Live
to confront her?
I know. That would make everybody really think so much better of him for a minute.
It's really funny. Alex, a great job today. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. It's Alex Zalbin, everybody, from TV Guide. He's TV Guide's managing editor. Visit TVGuide.com if you have any questions or just want to read up on your favorite TV shows. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. This, of course, is WGN. You can reach us at 312-981-7200. A couple of weeks ago, I'm online and I'm looking at a story that has to do with the London Marathon. And there's a picture of two guys that are running the London Marathon, and their names are Johnny Benjamin and Neil Laybourne. And I say to myself, oh, that's not that out of the ordinary to show two guys running the London Marathon.
Two buddies.
What's the big deal? Yeah, this happens all the time. That's nothing special, right? And then I find out their backstory, and I'll be honest with you, I had tears in my eyes because their backstory is beautiful. They join us on the phone right now from England, Johnny Benjamin and Neil Laybourne. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? We're great. Thank you.
We're thrilled that you're on with us. Do me a favor. Let's start at the very beginning. Let's start at the time you guys first met, and then we'll tell the story from there. And this would be January 14th, 2008. Tell about that first meeting, guys. What happened?
So I was 20 at the time, and I was really unwell. I was just been diagnosed with a form of schizophrenia. It's something called schizoaffective disorder, which is like a combination of schizophrenia and bipolar. And I was in hospital. I was receiving treatment in a psychiatric hospital in London. And essentially, I just gave up. I was embarrassed.
Why were you embarrassed, Johnny? What was happening that was making you embarrassed?
Well, I was, you know, I thought when I was put into the hospital, I believed that I was being possessed by the devil. I believed as well I was being watched by TV cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And when the psychiatrist said to me, "This is all in your head, and you've got this condition." I mean, yeah, I was so embarrassed.
You couldn't help that, Johnny. That was, your brain was making its own stories.
I know, but you know, I never had any mental health sort of education at school. I didn't understand. back then I didn't understand that. I thought it was me. I thought it was me as a whole person. You know, I was a bad person. You know, I was being possessed by the devil. My brain was a bad brain, and essentially I'd never recover. That was the big thing that, you know, I'd never get better. Because, you know, particularly, I don't know what it's like where you are, but, you know, for me growing up, I never read any positive stories about people with schizophrenia. In the English media, it's always, when people have schizophrenia, it's always like people are violent or dangerous. So when I got that diagnosis, I was like, I'm never going to get a job, and you know, I'm never going to meet someone who's going to want to marry me.
Right, it's like your life's over, kind of. I can understand how you would feel that way, because it wasn't talked about very much.
Not at all. And I thought, what's the point? You know, what? Not just for me, to be honest, but my family as well. You know, it was awful, my family having to see me in this state in hospital. And them having to, I just thought, this can't carry on, you know, like them visiting me every single day for years and years and years in hospital. It was just hopeless. It was really hopeless. And I just wanted out, not just for me, but for them, to be honest. I just felt like a burden and a waste for my parents and my brother and just all of my family, really. I just thought it's just better for everyone if I just do, you know, just end it, really.
And Johnny, I want to reiterate, at the time you were very young. You're 20 years old, huh?
Yeah, I was 20, and I was studying. I was at university here at the time, and my prospects before were really good, you know. But then suddenly, with this diagnosis and being in hospital, I was like, no one's going to give me a job. I'm never going to work, and I'm never going to, you know, get back to just all my dreams. Everything that I wanted to do in life just suddenly seemed impossible, really. And I just couldn't bear it. I couldn't bear it. Being in the hospital was really tough. No one was getting better. It was just, like I said before, it was hopeless, really. It was really hopeless, you know.
So in a series of dark moments, you decide for yourself that life is just not worth living, that there's no point in it. You're not getting better. You're getting worse. And you don't want to be a burden to your family and friends. And you just don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, huh?
No. And to be honest, there was other stuff going on. So I was struggling with my sexuality. Yeah. And that was a big part of this, to be honest. I come from a Jewish background, Jewish family, and, you know, having mental health issues and then, you know, knowing inside that I was gay and not being able to, I just felt so much shame for me, but shame on my family as well. And I just thought, I couldn't deal with it. And I didn't want them to deal with it. I just thought it was better.
That's a lot to handle, all that inner turmoil, if you want to be honest about it, Johnny. That's a lot. So you had decided it was time to relieve the burden. So you walked to a certain place. And is that where you met Neil?
Yeah, I ran away from the hospital. I said I needed a cigarette, and they let me out, and I ran away, and I went to this place, and I don't know how long I was there for. It was, you know, it's a kind of hazy memory for me, but I know it was around sort of 10 o'clock in the morning, and Monday morning, and then this stranger started talking to me. That's where Neil comes in.
So
Neil,
you were
the stranger
on the Waterloo Bridge. That's where your location was. Neil, why don't you jump in now?
So Waterloo Bridge is like, you know, one of the main bridges in the middle of London, in the centre of London. One of the busiest bridges as well. Like when he said, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning and it's a Monday and, you know, it's so busy. And at that time as well, you know, January in London is so cold, probably not as cold as Canada, but, you know, pretty cold, horrible weather and everything. And it was a horrible rainy day. Everybody was in coats and gloves, gloves, hat and everything. But, anyway, walking over that bridge on the way to work in the morning, I saw somebody sitting, you know, towards the end of the bridge on the railings, just facing the water. And he was just wearing a jeans and T-shirt and just shivering, just looking out to the water. And, just in his own world.
Neil, you could see the desperation on Johnny's face. You knew something wasn't quite right, huh?
Yeah, I got to the point where when I walked past, I had to approach him. Nobody else did, and I couldn't just carry on walking past. So I approached him and I said, you know what, you know, I didn't know what to say. I said, why are you sitting on the bridge? And he looked at me and he said, I'm gonna take my life. I did. I'd never seen somebody in that much desperation. You know, like his eyes I'd never talked to somebody who was suicidal before. I'd never even addressed the subject.
Yeah.
Or you know. So yeah, and I was asking him, you know, like why, and he was trying to explain what was going on. But yeah, he was in like a really bad place, and didn't actually want me there. He kept telling me to go away, to leave him alone, and was getting very agitated actually, and didn't trust me. Didn't want me to get my phone out or call anybody over. He just wanted me to go away and let him do this.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't go away. And how did you ultimately change his mind, Neil?
Yeah, I didn't know what to say. I didn't try to talk him down. I just was asking questions. I just stayed by his side, you know, just to reassure him. And it took a long time, you know, about 20 minutes or so, you know, just asking questions. And he started to open up and tell me about all the things in his head that he was going through. But, you know, he was still sitting on the bridge and I still couldn't get him away until I suggested, you know, let's go for a coffee. Let's sit down. Let's go to the end of the bridge and have a coffee and just tell me everything, as much time as you need. I was trying to think how to get the police involved, actually, and that was my way. But also, I actually wanted to hear as well, you know, what was going on. I'd completely forgotten about where I needed to be. I was just in this moment with this stranger, and he that was what changed, you know, and he became a bit more responsive, and he climbed over the side of the bridge, and then we were standing together, you know, like on the pavement, on the sidewalk of the bridge. And about to go for a coffee, somebody called the police. You know, one of the passers-by had called the police, and a police car came screeching up beside us before we were able to go for the coffee. And I had to grab Johnny because you know he panicked and went for the bridge. But the police came out and restrained him really quickly and. Kind of, you know, like took control of the situation, which I was happy about that, you know, he was now with the professionals. But so they took a statement from me, and so we'd been together like about half an hour by this point, and it was all happening so quickly with the police. They took a statement, then they took Johnny off.
Yeah.
Who, you know, they said they were taking him to a hospital, and they told me just to go on about my day and go back to work. So as quickly as I got into this conversation, it ended, and that's what I just thought. Okay, well, now he's with the professionals.
Sure. But it did not end there. We'll tell you what happens next. Stick around. It's Johnny Benjamin and Neil Laybourne, all the way from England, telling their story. A fantastic story of friendship and saving a life. Stick around. We'll continue this next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Well, there's nothing better than when a sad story has a happy ending, and this would certainly qualify. Johnny Benjamin, we're going back a couple years here to January of 2008. Johnny Benjamin hit rock bottom. He was ready to end his life. Nothing was going his way. A series of problems just contributing to this, and Johnny decides to go on the Waterloo Bridge and take his own life. Neil Laybourne is on his way to work, and he sees Johnny, and he says to himself, I can't just let this man kill himself. I have to step in. So he starts talking to him and they chat for a little bit. And then the police come by. And Johnny, they took you where exactly?
They took me to a hospital to be sectioned, and I stayed in the hospital then for another few weeks. It was eventually discharged, and, you know, it took years, to be honest. It took another few years to really sort of get back on track. But, you know, what Neil did on the bridge that day always was in the back of my head, you know. His words of, because he said to me that day, he said something that no one else had said to me before, and that essentially was, "You will get better." And those words stayed with me, and they essentially got me through the darkest time.
And how did you guys reconnect after a certain amount of time? What happened there?
Yeah, it was 6 years. So 6 years went by, and when I started to feel better, I started to get involved with the world of mental health. Here in the UK, and I launched this like social media campaign to find him, but I actually I called it Find Mike because I actually thought his name was Mike. I know, but nevertheless we launched it, and just the response was amazing. It went viral, and yeah, through Facebook, Neil's wife actually saw it, and you know, she was the one that kind of said, well, she was the one that kind of reunited us, and Neil got in touch, and yeah, we reunited. It was just such a special moment, really, for both of us, I think.
So you reunited, and it's a wonderful moment. And then, how do you decide to run the marathon together?
Yeah. So when we reunited, which was 3 years ago, yeah, great question. You know, we started campaigning together just to be a bigger voice. You know, I learned about all the work that Johnny has done over the past couple of years, you know, reaching out with all the mental health charities. And I said, you know, I want to join you. This is so important, you know, getting to know him as a friend and working together, which led to last year we were working with the royal family over in London, you know, Prince William and Princess Catherine. And their charity, Heads Together, was sponsoring the London Marathon. And we said to them, we met with them, they're doing work around mental health, and we said, we want to support you, and we want to support your Heads Together campaign. And so we did. We ran the marathon 3 weeks ago in London, first time for both of us, and we managed to raise about £40,000.
Wow.
And yeah, I know. So... and we don't know, you know, what's next, but we want to really continue this journey to kind of tell our story of hope and recovery, mental health recovery, which there's just not enough stories of. You know, people need to hear about Johnny's journey and the different place that he's in now than what he was. So, yeah.
People need to know that there is hope, and there is definitely light at the end of the tunnel, and you guys are going to prove it. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. Yeah, well, you know, our big thing, you know, here in the UK, we go around hospitals and prisons and businesses to tell our story. But I think most importantly, we go into a lot of schools because it's the young people. It's the young people that need to hear it the most. You know, when I was young, I never got that message. And if I'd have got that message when I was in school, I just think it could have stopped me from getting to the bridge. So we want to stop other young people from reaching that crisis point. So that's why we go into the schools and do what we do, really.
And how do we keep in touch with you via social media? What's the best place to contact you?
Oh, okay. So you can get us on Instagram, so at Johnny and Neil, mm-hmm. Johnny and Neil, J-O-N-N-Y and N-E-I-L. And you can get us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangeronthebridge. Yeah, so we have Facebook and really Instagram is how we communicate with people on social media. At Mr. Johnny Benjamin and at Neil Aborn.
We'll put some of those links on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. But what a happy ending to this story, and continued success to both of you.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having us on. Thank
Absolutely,
you.
Guys. What a great story. It's Johnny Benjamin and it's Neil Aborn showing once and for all that everybody makes a difference. Being in the right place at the right time can save a life. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.